The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Great to be with you today. Thank you for tuning in and allowing me to be part of your afternoon. As always, it is a mixed bag here. You know, this past Friday, we talked a little bit about the March job report and how it had fallen a little bit short of the estimates. The numbers came in. The payrolls grew by about 431,000 in March, a little bit below what they estimated. They were looking for more around the 490,000. Unemployment rate, it declined to 3.6%. But it raises a lot of questions, doesn't it? I mean, I had a call during the chapel at Divine Mercy today. Person asking for prayer for her son who owns a business and just can't find people to work. Just can't find people to work. Now, we know the COVID-19 pandemic has changed the U.S. labor market, right? More than any other event since the Great Recession, we know it's happening. Wages, on average, are rising. The distribution is unequal. I mean, I've hearing reports all the time of workers are quitting their jobs at a record pace. And then it's now leading like employers to entice replacements with raises to pay a little bit more. In fact, I know a young guy. He's a millennial. He is working in the world of finance, and he's been headhunted recently by some companies to hire him. But ever since the pandemic, he's been able to work from home, and he's been loving it, right? Now, the company he works for wants him in the office, I don't know, once or twice a week, maybe. But the other company, the headhunter, they're going to pay him more money. But he didn't want to work in the office. He didn't want to have to do that. So I think the pandemic is reshaping the U.S. labor market more than any other event. People are quitting their jobs. We're seeing this particularly in the low-paid sectors. And people are reevaluating how they want to work. Do they want office life? Do they want traffic? They'd rather work from home. And what are the enticements to get employees? Is it raises? Is it bonuses? Is it a hybrid of working at home and coming into the office? A lot to talk about today. So I thought it'd be good. Maybe you're looking for a job, or maybe you're an employer and you're thinking, man, I can't find good help. I thought we could take a look at what is going on in the job labor market today. And I've invited to join me by a good friend, a person who I know that you hear frequently on Morning Air. It's good to have Bruce Lochenecker with me today. He Harvard educated, and of course is, I think, perhaps one of the foremost experts when it comes to, well, helping you find a job, really. He's a professional career coach. And, of course, he's here today to share some of his insights, but he's been working for 25 years with public and private company, you know, board directors and CEOs and top executives. So if you got a question, a comment, you have a talent need, he's the guy for you. In fact, I have a daughter who graduated from college with an international business degree and studied abroad. And he very graciously said, hey, have her get in touch with me. It's a strange world out there. Bruce is here to help bring some clarity and understanding to it. Bruce, good afternoon. It's good to have you with us.
Drew, good afternoon. It's great to be here.
A lot of numbers, right? A lot of factors, a lot of weird things going on right now. So I'd love your take on it. COVID, I think, has really changed the labor market. I'd love your take on that. We know that employers added jobs in March, 11th straight month of job gains, above 400,000. Give me your sense of where we are and what's happening.
With pleasure, Drew. And I'd like to come back to that friend of yours, the finance executive, because my view is you don't need to choose between working at home and getting market compensation, but we'll come back to that.
Great.
So I like to look to try and simplify what's going on in the labor market. I look at it through the lens of an economist. That's what my undergraduate education is in. And if you look at the demand and the supply, the demand for workers is what you'd expect at this time of an economic cycle. You know, we had that surprise pullback with the quarantine, and now we're in a recovery. And before we went into that, we were hitting on all cylinders, Drew. We had record low unemployment. across the board, the economy was humming. So those 400,000 jobs you just mentioned is part of us playing catch up as we're trying to get people back and working and thriving. So almost across the board, the only exception being hospitality and travel, industries are back with a vengeance and then some. Now, so that's pretty straightforward, I think. What's interesting and curious, and you were hitting on this, is the supply side, meaning you and me offering our labor to companies. There are two big factors going on. One, I don't like the term great resignation, but that's the popular one, and we'll come back to that. And then two, what I would call the great imbalance. So let's start with the great resignation. LinkedIn calls it the great reshuffling. I think the great reawakening. That's what you were talking about when you mentioned this finance executive who discovered being forced to work at home, he kind of liked working at home. He liked the flexibility and being able to, whatever it is, have dinner consistently with his family, take his kids to soccer practice, whatever it might be. People were reawakened to the fact that how we spend our time is important. You know, on that last day, God's not going to say how hard did you work, but how much did you love? And it's harder to love when you're just grinding it out in the commute and then in the office. I've got lots of examples. Like your friend, just one comes to mind. One family we went to visit on the East Coast, the three adult kids. One of them changed the locations for work, so changed his job basically. One sit out on his own, left his previous employer and put out his own shingle, and that's happening, I think, a fair amount. And then the third one stayed in her job, but she got around to publishing her book. So that this time we had, there was a silver lining to that quarantine that we had, and it kind of changed mindsets. And the supply of labor, as I mentioned, these three examples, and your friend, is very fluid, very active. Every search that we're doing now, Drew, my day job is being a partner in an executive search firm. When we're going out to market for a company looking to fill a position, we'll get great candidates. They all get multiple offers. It's that type of job market. So we have to move really, really fast or those candidates disappear. And our clients, the chief human resources officers, are recognizing this and really trying to step up their retention efforts. So be it compensation, what have you. But so that's a great reawakening or resignation. The other thing that we find is there's an imbalance out there. I'm going to call it the great imbalance. I mean, it's crazy. There are 11.3 million jobs open. We hit a peak in December, 11.4. We've just been bouncing around right at the top there. But only 6.3 million job seekers. Those are unemployed people that are looking for work.
Wow.
So there are almost two jobs for every job seeker. That's a lot of opportunity out there.
Hey, let me stop you on that point, though, Bruce. Let me say, I don't understand that. I mean, are these lower wage jobs? That's why we're seeing 11.3 million jobs? Or is this spread across the spectrum? I mean, why do we have so many available jobs and why aren't people... I was sharing on the air earlier today when we were praying the chapel. I was driving through a town just a couple of days ago, and there were three signs outside of three different businesses saying hiring. Why 11.3 million jobs and only 6.3 million unemployed seekers?
You know, you and I are going to have to theorize why, because economists have got a bunch of theories, and that's what economics is. You know, we look at the data and try and figure out what's going on. So help me out. Here's my view. I'll tell you what the economists are saying, and then some data that came out that I think is the silver bullet on this. One is you have a lot of baby boomers that retired. Mm-hmm. Well, that happens. You know, that happens over time. And interesting, what we see though is now they're starting to come back. The average rate for retirees coming back into the job market is 3%. We're back at that rate.
Wow.
So that's one bit of data. The second one, I don't know if you know anybody doing this, but a lot of people during the quarantine started doing other things. They were trading crypto, they were selling, you know, whatever online and starting little businesses on the side and thought, you know what, I could do this, and have set off on entrepreneurial ventures or offering their services on a freelance basis. They call it the gig economy. So that takes people out of the employee data or pool, the talent pool for companies. Some economists say there are fewer immigrants. I don't know about that, but they felt that was the case. And then we talked about this last time, that there was data that came out that suggested there are more parents staying home. I think initially they were frustrated with the remote learning not going well and may have decided to homeschool or at least support the remote learning. And there was some wealth that came. There, both real estate appreciation, if people are fortunate enough to own a house, and if they have retirement funds, we saw those go up as well. So those people are out of the market. I think there's a little bit of all of the above. But the thing that I think is most fascinating, you touched on this earlier, I call it the COVID gap. Yeah. So last week, the Wall Street Journal reported on some census data. 2.8 million people still weren't working in early March because they either had or were caring for someone that had COVID. And then another 2.3 million people weren't working. So that's more than 5 million people, Drew, because they're afraid of getting COVID. So if you took this, those are the 5 million job seekers that would help fill the balance of those jobs that are open. And my advice for the COVID gap, look, for whatever reason, if you don't feel comfortable going, that's your own decision. But the good news is, we're called to work, Drew. As you know, we get fulfillment from work. Yep. Yeah, supernatural and human fulfillment. The good news is, just like you said, this finance executive, more people are working from home and enjoying working from home. Right now on LinkedIn, 16% of jobs are available for remote workers. That's pretty impressive. I mean, you've never seen it at that level. And 40% of the job seekers want to work remotely. So we're coming, I believe, because I've got clients on both sides that say, okay, we're open working remotely. No, we have to have them in. And if we have to have them in, it's going to dramatically reduce the talent pool that you're going to look at, because I think we're coming into a new reality where if you want to, you can work from home or work on a hybrid model where you can have a couple days a week where you work from home, maybe because you have a ballet recital, what have you. Mm-hmm. So
my guest today, Bruce Lochenour, if you want to join us, toll free, 888-914-9149, taking a look at the labor market and all that's tangential to it as well. Maybe you're looking to hire somebody. Maybe you're in business as well. I want to go to the phones. We'll grab a couple calls. Before I do that, I'm just curious about what this means for bricks and mortar, for infrastructure in general. A lot of people are now working from home. A lot of corporations had to rent office space. It's a big expense down there as well. Are we seeing corporate models changing as well? Are employers, like in the radio industry, we're seeing this too. A lot of radio entities right now are realizing we don't need everybody in studio. We can set them up. They can broadcast remotely. And I know this is the case for other institutions as well. Are we now seeing a contraction in terms of what they're expecting to? It affects their bottom line, I would think. How do you see that from the employer side of the issue? What are the benefits of this new model?
My sense is that, and I'm not an expert on the corporate real estate market, and I've heard stories of big office buildings in New York City being converted to condos for just the reason you're mentioning. What I see with my clients, especially those that are growing, they're still investing in real estate and doing opening new facilities and moving forward. My hunch is, Drew, that it's a lagging indicator, that it's going to be they're going to have a few quarters, if not a few years, of saying, hey, we still have a lot of empty office space. Yeah. I think they need to see what the new reality looks like. I think companies are just now starting to say, come back and see what that really means. But so far, maybe a little bit.
There's pros and cons to it. I mean, there's a dynamic. There's a synergy when you work together. There's a collaborative spirit. There's also, I think, sometimes greater focus in remote working as well. I hear that from a lot of people who do that now. So, I like the hybrid model personally, but let's take a few calls. Mike has got a question. He's listening in Annapolis, Maryland. Mike, you're on the air. Bruce Lochenour. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Hey, Mike. Long time. I hope you're well.
I am, Mike.
Hey, how
thanks.
Are you?
Good.
I have a question and a comment. I think one of the things I would argue, too, is that the labor pool has been reduced because we've lost close to 1 million people. Not everybody was over 80 or in the retirement pool that we lost. But I would also ask for Bruce's opinion about, I just don't see how people can start a career working from home exclusively. I just don't. I look at my background in finance for years, and I just can't imagine not being able to be around people who you could observe and mentor and building relationships and meeting with customers. I just think that I personally think there's going to be a backlash here in the next couple of years where if you don't go to the office, A, obviously, I don't think you're going to get promoted, and B, you may not even have a job. Hey, thank you for taking my call. Just interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Thanks, Mike. Mike, that's such a great point. And Bruce, I'd love to hear what you say, because somebody once told me the same thing. If you look at who gets promoted, it's the person in the office. It's not the guy that's necessarily working remotely. Maybe you're out of sight, out of mind. I don't know. Maybe people think you paid your dues. Mike had, I think, some great points. I'd love you to get your perspective.
Yeah, I agree. And Mike, I have to tell you, I'm of the in-person school myself. I missed being with clients and talking about what was top of mind for them. And I think you lose so much if you're not there in person. However, we are in this unique labor market, and with a talent pool that's coming up that has, again, been reawakened to what's important. So if it's, maybe there's a happy medium. I don't know what the answer is. I would think you need to work a little bit harder if you're going to be 100% remote. I do think, I have a hunch that there's a hybrid model where you can have your cake and eat it too. You can still get the FaceTime, get the mentoring, and yet get the flexibility to do what's most important in your life.
All right. Mike, I hope that helped. Thank you. Good to hear from you. We'll go to Nick in Rio Rancho, New Mexico next. Nick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wanting to see if you had maybe any advice, Bruce, on my company is doing just remote for now, possibly going into a hybrid model. But remote, definitely, like you said before, focus is, you know, definitely an aspect of it I enjoy. And also it gives a little bit more leeway to do things. But also, I find that, at least for me, there's a struggle with motivation because there's a lot of, you know, temptations around the house, I would say. You know, you want to get something done. Would you have any advice for, you know, kind of getting motivated, keeping on track, or just, you know, kind of avoiding those kind of distractions?
Sure. You bet, Nick. Thanks for calling in. You know, the other thing that has happened is with the remote working is there's been a lot of burnout. It's hard. Two things happened. One, your company's initially cut back, and they were seeking the existing workers to pick up the slack of those workers that might have been laid off. And in some cases, they haven't added back enough resources, and those workers are working really hard at burning out. The other piece of that is when you're working from home, it's sometimes hard to turn off, and a managing partner in the professional services firm, which I'm in, said, it's pretty binary, Bruce, that people either figured it out and are nailing it or are struggling because they feel, you know, they're walking by their home office and step in and check their work and don't unplug. So on focus, though, different topics. Just wanted to touch on that. And I hope you guys do go back to some kind of hybrid model, because again, I'm a believer in, we're social beings, we're social creatures. Drew, I love your thoughts on this, but it just helps to be with friends, colleagues, and that's part of the culture, and it's important. So again, I can argue both sides of this, but I think it's important to at least have a hybrid myself. In terms of focus, the one suggestion I would make, I'm sorry, Drew.
No, you go right ahead, please.
Okay, is offer it up. If you can take on an hourly basis, just break it down to bite-sized pieces. The two things I would suggest. One is take a little time at the beginning of the day, 15, 20 minutes, and map out what your priorities are, what you want to accomplish the day, and which ones are most important, and then tackle the hardest one first. But bite it, but chop them into hour blocks. And start off that hour, pray to Our Lady, pray to St. Joseph, say a prayer, and offer it up for an intention. Say, Lord, I'm going to work really hard, I'm going to focus, and I'm not going to go downstairs and have potato chips, because I want to make this a great offering to you. And if it's an offering to God for a special attention, maybe a friend that's sick or struggling, you're going to do it well. So my suggestion is prioritize what needs to get done and break it into hour blocks and say a prayer at the beginning and end and offer it up.
Such great advice. Nick, thank you very much. Edward is a professor. He's listening in Roseland, New Jersey. He's got a comment for you. Good afternoon, Edward.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew. I appreciate you're taking my call. I wanted to make it a kind of an experience that I had with this hybrid work space. And one of the main things that helped me during the quarantine was staying home and building a relationship with my family. I used to commute from New Jersey to Brooklyn, and you know, my commute was 3 hours out of my day. And I barely got home to receive my, you know, put my kids to bed, say a prayer with my children, hang out with my wife. It just robbed me. So when the quarantine hit, it gave me an opportunity to actually see who my son was, my children. I have actually now 4 children. Wow. And see who my wife was. We reestablished our relationship. We built a better bond, and we prayed together. You know, as I said, as a family, we prayed together, stayed together. So now I find myself with a new job in Nessus County. I work 3 days on, and I'm off 2 days. And this helps. This has helped tremendously. I receive my son from school. We hang out. We eat dinner. We do homework. So the quarantine really did help me a lot in that sense. But, you know, as a head of household, I still do believe that some time in the job place works, you know, and it actually helped me a lot spiritually as well.
It's a great example, Edward. Yeah, no, go ahead. I'm going to let you respond because we only have a few minutes here and I want to get some other calls in. But you know, that's really a good argument for the ability to be at home. He can see his child, spend a little more time with his wife, not be in a car for 3 hours. I think that's great.
Amen.
It's not one size fits all, is it? I think it's certain models work better for certain people, and also that hybrid could be a real solution, as it was in the case of Edward.
Yeah, I love, again, the reawakening to what's important, your faith and your family. Yep. That's fantastic. Amen. Before you mentioned that you moved close, you got a new job closer, I was going to say, move your house, move your work. You got to do something. So happy to hear that, Edward. Thank you.
That's awesome. All right, we'll go back. Jonathan's listening in San Diego, California. Jonathan, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I've been a full-time remote worker for over 9 years, which is the majority of the time I've been with my company. I haven't seen my manager or any of my colleagues in person in around 3 years, maybe 3.5.
Wow.
And I think it's wonderful. It works great. I would never go back to being in an office. I would retire early before I would do that. And this allows me to live my life. I mean, all 3 of my kids have mental health and anxiety challenges. Mm-hmm. My 87-year-old father lives with us. And if I were not a remote worker, I could not manage my life. It's the best thing in the world.
That's great. Hey, Jonathan, thanks. Thank you for the call. And that, apparently that model works for you. I'm curious if you could maybe answer this, Bruce, because, I mean, that model's clearly worked well for him. We lived in a time for decades where you were 9-to-5, you were in the office, you commuted, you did your thing. Have we entered a new chapter in the way Americans work? Will it ever go back to the way it was? I know there's many people who want it to go back that way, but you just heard the last 2 or 3 calls all advocating for either the hybrid or the benefits of staying at home.
Yeah, I think it has changed, Drew. I think we're largely due to technology. You know, with the high-speed internet available at home, I mean, I've heard from a professional services leader that some people have better technology at home than they have in the office. So it's almost a hindrance to come to the office.
That's so funny.
I think it's a wonderful new stage of the work environment because it allows people like Jonathan to be able to take care of his kids and his parents. I mean, that's fantastic. God bless him. That's wonderful.
You know, during the COVID pandemic, I mean, weathermen were doing their reports from home. And you actually had television. I did an interview for a television show that was on. I did it right off my laptop. And I see how everybody's now doing, whether they're television shows or a lot of these remotes, from the comfort of their own home. So it is kind of cool. To your point, technology has really been a big factor in changing all this. We only have a couple minutes. Let me go grab a few more calls. A lot of people want to speak to you, Bruce. Julie is in Chicago. Great. Julie, hi. You're on the air with Bruce Lockenauer.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I really love your show. God bless you.
God bless you.
So my husband has been working out of our house for 35 years. He's just going to retire in July. And it's had its pros and cons. It can be stressful on a marriage because I was a stay-at-home mom, but it was good when my kids played sports. He was always able to be there, go for practice. He was coaching, so that was a positive thing to it. So it's got its good and bad things. But now my son recently started working from home, was out of college when COVID hit, and so he's finally got a full-time job. But he has an addiction problem, and being at home is not a good thing for him. He needs to be out meeting colleagues, and working with a mentor, like face to face, and this has posed a problem. He's struggling. So, and you know, as with an adult child, what do you do? Yeah. There's not, I don't think there's a whole lot I can do except let him figure it out for himself. But I think, you know, working with a mentor would be a good thing.
Yeah. All right. But Julie, thank you for your call. I'm sorry for the struggle that you're going through. Bruce, your advice for her, what would you recommend?
Yeah, I think you should let him know. Julie, so the job market is unlike we've ever seen before. So he's in a position where he can find what he needs, where if his current company is remote, he can find one where they're on premise. I would encourage you to help him think about, because the other thing is, he could, you know, the market's so good, you can make more money, you can have, you know, lots of added benefits in making a move today. I'm not saying if you're happy, you need to move, but if you're not happy, or if you're in a situation that's not optimal, you should move. So I would encourage you to let him know that right now is the time. It's not going to stay this way forever. Now is the time to find a better environment.
I'm going to seek another quick call, and Annette's been holding since you've been here. Annette in Fort Myers, Florida, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. I can certainly relate to the caller that was relaying about the commute. I was also commuting more than 3 hours a day. So I decided to move to a job that was closer to home. What I did not realize was that I was going to have insurance costs that were much, much higher than I anticipated, of more than $500 a month. And the wages were a significant cut. More than, you know, a third of my salary was cut. So I'm just looking for advice on this. There isn't any leveraging to negotiate a higher salary. So I wanted to just comment on that and ask, pose that question as well.
Wow. Great. Great question. Thank you very much. Bruce, I have about 2-3 minutes at the very most for you.
Yeah, good. Annette, thanks for calling in. I think a lot of people, and I've had other callers and emails about being frustrated that the compensation isn't equitable for whatever reason. Again, in this market, you do have a lot of leverage, and it's not hard to find out what the market compensation is. There are many websites out there, Glassdoor, Survey.com, Salary.com, and others, Vault, that will give you the market compensation for a role. The other thing I'd encourage people to do, if they're in their dream job, but for whatever reason they're feeling like they're not making what they should be making, is to gently put a toe in the water. Maybe you update your LinkedIn profile and start responding to some of the inquiries that you get on jobs. I've got a friend who's a software sales executive. He said he gets multiple inquiries every week on LinkedIn. And or talk to others that maybe have left or are in a similar role to find out compensation. Because I think with that data, it's hard to argue. Because my guess is that manager, given this job market and given the great reawakening and everybody making moves, probably has a few open positions right now that he or she is struggling to fill and isn't looking to fill another one. Yeah. So I hope that helps a little bit, Annette.
Annette, I wish I had more time, but I've got to leave it right there. My apology to everyone on hold. And Bruce, thank you for being with us. I know you're on Morning Air on a regular basis. Why don't you put a quick plug in for when you'll be on next?
Sure, I'll be on a week from this Wednesday, so not this week, but next week, Wednesday at 7:30. And well, I can be reached at bruce@relevantradio.com.
bruce@relevantradio.com. Bruce, let's get you back. Great conversation, so much still to talk about, but I appreciate it. My warmest regards to your beautiful wife as well, okay?
Likewise, Drew. Thanks so much.
Thank you. All right, Bruce Lockenauer. I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, Mary Brunson joins us. I want to talk about retirement savings. Social Security retirement age reaches 67. Some may say it goes higher. We'll take a look at that. How to save for retirement. We'll take a look at 401ks and more. So stay with me. The conversation continues.
The Secure Act 2.0 includes provisions from my Retirement Savings Lost and Found Act, which will help address the challenge of tracking retirement savings. My bill creates a national lost and found registry for retirement accounts housed at the Department of Labor. The Lost and Found Registry will provide workers with a centralized way to track their retirement accounts, and also it will help workers claim their hard-earned retirement funds regardless of how often they transitioned from job to job.
Savers credit improvements in this bill will help low-income families start putting aside money for the future, certainly a key to getting out of poverty. The enhanced credit for small employers offering retirement plans will help more businesses offer plans, an important factor in recruiting and retaining talent. New tools, like allowing employers to match workers' student loan repayments with retirement contributions, eliminate the need for young workers to choose between paying their debt or saving for retirement. And provisions like enhanced catch-up contributions and delaying required minimum distributions until age 75 will help older workers have more control as they near retirement.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, from the labor market with Bruce to retirement reform with Mary Brunson, who will be joining me in a moment. I thought it'd be good to take a look at what's next. I know sometimes it's really hard to save. I don't know how secure you are for your retirement. Maybe you are already on, you know, living in that that retirement world. Maybe you're just trying to save or catch up right now. The retirement reform plan, it's known as the Secure 2.0, is finally on the move again on Capitol Hill. It was formerly known as the Securing a Strong Retirement Act of 2022. It passed by the House of Representatives. I think it was last week that I saw this, overwhelmingly, 414-5 vote. And I thought today we'd take a look at expanding on a retirement bill, you know, what it means for you, what you need to do in terms of investing. Also, as a Catholic, you know, are you growing your wealth with, you know, the greater good in mind? A lot to get into. We'll be all over the place. Let me welcome to the conversation. She'll take your calls and questions too. If you want to jump in with your, you know, with your retirement questions, whether it deals with Social Security or anything else, feel free to go ahead and do that. It's a pleasure to have on the program with me today, Mary Brunson. She's vice president, co-creator of Investing for Catholics, and co-author of Trending the Flock: Shepherding Catholic Retirement Plans. And she's a board member of the Magis Institute, you know that, right? Spearheaded by Father Robert Spitzer, a great organization, great institute. So be sure and check them out. Mary, thank you for your time. I'm so glad you could be with me today.
Thanks for having me, Drew. Just want to clarify, I am a past board member for Father Spitzer's Magis Institute, but I am currently a board member for the Orange Catholic Foundation and also Catholic Charities of Orange County.
I love it. Well, thank you for your service. And this is one of those things that I think a lot of good Catholics don't even think about, Catholic investing, right? So often they have their 401k or their, you know, 403b, and money comes out of their paycheck. Who knows, you know, what those funds are going to support? And I just thought, in light of where we are, the labor market and rising wages, I just thought we could also take a look at retirement in general. I think a lot of people start often late. And I know also the thought of growing your wealth with the greater good in mind is both ethical and really important. Maybe just some basics, some 101 here for us. Where are most Americans today with their retirement savings? Some of the numbers I've seen are quite frightening that we're really behind the curve on this, but give me your take and the data that you might have to share.
So I was just looking at an article written by Richard Neal, who is the his title is the chair of the U.S. House Committee on Ways and Means. And in that article for the Boston Globe, he cites that roughly half of working age U.S. households are at risk of being unable to maintain their pre-retirement standard of living in retirement. And he gives another really disturbing metric. It's 31% of workers have no retirement savings at all.
Wow.
So it's a big problem. And, you know, collectively, we really don't do a very good job of saving for retirement. And I think this new bill that's so overwhelmingly passed is a very good step in the right direction in helping that, helping fix those metrics. One of the problems, I think, is people don't really have a grasp of what they really need to be able to live in retirement. and how much they need to be saving, and also how they go about investing. So we know that individuals, based on where they might fall in their income earnings bracket, we have research that breaks it into four different brackets, they need to replace anywhere between 23% to 37% of their income on an annual basis. And that does not include Social Security. That's in addition to Social Security. So good news for lower wage earners is that Social Security is going to be a, is going to give them a bigger percentage or a bigger share of their retirement income. So if you're in the low wage group, it's anywhere between 23 to 34% of your pre-retirement income that you need to save. But if you're a higher wage earner, say 50 to 75th percentile, you're earning maybe about $90,000 a year, you need to replace 31% of that income in order to be able to live in retirement. And that is, provided that you're looking to not, give up on, in order to live in your pre-retirement lifestyle, you'll need to replace that approximately that amount in retirement. So that's a heavy hurdle, really, yeah, at the end of the day. And that's important information for folks to have. So what does it take for someone to be able to get to that 31%? Yeah. If you want any degree of significant probability of success, say you want a 95% confidence level, you need to be saving about 13% per year.
Yeah, that's
and
amazing.
It's a big number. And, you know, a lot of people just, the problem is they say they start saving late, as you mentioned at the beginning of this segment. And so one of the things that I'm pleased with, but I'm also a little concerned about, is in this new bill, they have a provision that individuals age 62, 63, and 64 can increase their catch-up contribution from $6,500 a year to $10,000. Well, that's great, but the problem is it's really pretty late at that point. What we really want to see, and what's great about this bill also, is the auto-enrollment feature that they're providing all employees. So everyone will be automatically enrolled at 3%, which is not enough. But then ultimately, on an annual basis for the next 7 years, they will be automatically escalated or automatically increased up to 10%.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's, well, I'll tell you what, and hold the thought. I have to take a really short break here. When we come back, we'll talk more. I'm sorry, I called you Ann. Ann in Austin, Texas. I'll get you on since I said your name. You're first up when I return. My guest today, Mary Brunson. We're taking a look at retirement, and if you want to join us, we only have maybe 10, 15 more minutes. I'll open the phones, and I'll get your questions and your comments. The number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Talking about everything you need to know to retire and retire well. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the issues, one place.
One place.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so how are you doing? Are you ready to retire? Are you on track to retire? Are you saying, Drew, come on, inflation is through the roof. I can barely pay my bills, let alone buy food and fill up my gas tank. So what do you do? I'm joined today by a financial expert. Mary Brunson joins me this afternoon. We'll take a few of your calls. You know how this last segment goes. It flies. So if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. And Mary, let's go right back to the phones. Ann in Austin, Texas has got a really important question for you. Ann, good afternoon.
Hello, Drew. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Ann.
Good. My question is, and I've been a teacher for 30 years, and I spent 18 of those years teaching in Catholic school. And at the time that I taught, there was not retirement per se through the Catholic school system. However, in a couple of later years, it did begin. But for somebody who worked for 18 years, I ended up with $18,000 in retirement. That's like $1,000 a year. How does somebody who wants to do that, who would have loved to have stayed in teaching in the Catholic school, save for retirement?
Great question.
Well, even if you don't have a retirement plan provided by your employer, you can certainly set up an individual retirement account at a brokerage house, and then you can, and that's $6,500 a year if you're before, if you're under 50, or $7,000 a year after 50. They have a catch-up provision there. It's not nearly as robust as what you might get with an employer-sponsored plan, but at least it's something. And the important thing, and for everyone else out there, it's really important that you save as much as you can as early as you can, because those early earning years really can make a difference in helping you grow your wealth for retirement by taking advantage of the compounding aspect of interest and investment growth. So, for example, if you're investing, say, $7,000 early on, or $6,500 early on, then you will capture the ability to grow that wealth over time. And it's amazing that small dollars make a huge difference when you start early. Wow. So that's what I would recommend, Ann, if you don't have that ability now, through an employer, to at least get into an IRA, individual retirement account.
Ann, thank you.
That's good to hear. And I just know I'm thinking in terms, too, of the fact that if I were a single person, and I'm not, luckily I have a husband who also, but for single people who work at a Catholic school, I don't know about there where you are, but here in Texas, the pay is, I mean, giving up $6,500 a year is going to be hard for some people.
Yeah,
but I totally understand the process of how to go about that. So anyway, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for teaching in a Catholic school. We need well-formed, you know, students. They are the future, that's for sure. We need good people like you. My guest today, Mary Brunson, Vice President and Co-Creator of Investing for Catholics. And if you want to join us, I'll take a few more calls. Before I take another call, let me just ask you about something. It's on the radar of a lot of people. When to take Social Security? And there's a couple of mindsets here, and I'd like to get your take on it. You know, the average age when people say they hope to retire is 62, according to one survey I saw. But there's also people who say, hey, wait a minute, you know, if you do it too early, you get reduced benefits, so you should wait till you're 66 or 67, depending on when you were born. You'll receive the full benefits which you've earned. Or some say, wait to 70, and you'll get an 8% benefit increase over the retirement age. That's a big question for a lot of people. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives last week approved a retirement bill that would push out the age for required minimum distributions on certain savings to 75. That's up from 72. And that change, if it passes the Senate, would gradually be phased in by 2032. Your advice on this for Americans getting close to that retirement age?
Well, there really is no one-size-fits-all solution for Social Security. It depends on whether or not you're still working and you're just looking for an income offset, or if you have other assets that you can pull from and then stave off taking your Social Security to a little bit later date. To your point, if you wait until 67, that's full retirement age, so you get 100% of your Social Security benefit. You do give up a significant amount if you start taking it at 62. It's something like 30% less.
Wow.
And that, you know, if we're looking at living longer, and with the inflation being what it is, we certainly need to stave off pulling out of Social Security, or it makes good sense to hold off on pulling out of Social Security until full retirement age, if you're able to do that. And also, you mentioned 8% increase. That's each year.
Oh, wow.
So even if you waited until 68, as opposed to 67, you would get 108% of your full retirement benefit. And it just goes up from there up to 70. But that's a case by case situation. And if anybody, you know, has any questions about that, I would encourage them to reach out to me and I can sort of walk them through those considerations.
That's fantastic. All right. Mary is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I have a question about investing, actually. I have inherited some money, and I don't know what the best way to invest it would be. And I wonder if Mary knows, has any good ideas.
Well, Mary, thank you for your question, and I certainly do have some ideas for you. The company I work for, Investing for Catholics, is a division of a company called Index Fund Advisors, and as the name would connote, we build and manage portfolios that are built with index funds. Index funds investing is a very savvy way for you to be investing your assets. And you can do that in certain circumstances in accordance with the faith. And that's something that we specialize in. So that's what I've been doing since 2009 is building and managing Catholic values-based portfolios. It's very important when you look at investments that you look at how much risk you're able to take, what's the stock to bond ratio that's appropriate for you given your age and purpose of the funds and some other considerations like what's your gut for risk. And then it's important that you pay careful attention to fees because the lower cost investments, lower cost index funds are going to leave more of your money in your portfolio to grow. So it's very important that you understand the fees that you're paying, you understand the amount of risk that you're taking, you understand that in advance. Because unfortunately, what we find is that some people, they realize after it's too late that they really couldn't stomach the amount of stock market exposure that they had in their portfolio, and they don't have the emotional wherewithal to sit tight in the down market. So it's very important also to realize what the purpose of the money is. If this is long-term money, invest in a low-cost, diversified index portfolio and make sure that you stay put no matter what.
Well,
thank
well
you
said.
So much.
Mary, thank you very much. I only have about a minute and a half left. I don't know if I have time for any more calls. So just some final thoughts. Mary, first of all, thank you for your advice. I know we've only scratched the surface and there's so much to talk about. I'll have to have you back when we can maybe drill into this deeper and take a lot more calls. But with the final moment, I just want to give you the platform.
Well, thank you. Just in summary, I'm really, really pleased with this Secure Act 2.0. I think it's really going to help a lot of people save for retirement. I think that's very valuable. And again, just understand what the hurdle is that you're facing with funding your retirement. Because the last thing we ever want to see is for individuals to outlive their money. That's a very painful scenario. And start early and pay yourself first and save as much as you can as long as you can.
Great advice. Mary, thank you. We'll talk again soon. That's Mary Brunson. She is Vice President, Co-Creator of Investing for Catholics and co-author of Tending the Flock, Shepherding Catholic Retirement Plans. I'm Drew Mariani, out of time for the day. Cale Clark is coming up. Stay tuned for him. Till tomorrow, have a great day.